This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode 191. What did you watch this week? This is Mike.
This is John. Apparently, I'm in a better mood than Mike is.
I'm in a great mood. Well, I'm in a great mood. I just finished watching Mr. Robot before we started recording, and we'll talk about it at the end of the episode. I guess I'm in a different headspace.
Well, you haven't had a lot of time to decompress from it.
Like 5 minutes, maybe.
Yeah. No, you literally, like, closed the laptop, walked in the other room, said, I don't know how I feel about that. Then came out, sat down, and record.
Yeah. So not even. It's true. I don't know how I feel about that. So like you kind of said before I hit the record button, I didn't watch a lot this week, but I have a lot to talk about. I'm trying to think if I watched any movies.
I watched two.
I don't think I did.
Oh, wow. I only have one trailer to talk about. It's the one that I sent you right before I came over here. And I only have a couple of news things, so.
I'm trying to think if I watched any movies or not. I really don't think I did. I just don't think I had time.
Well, you'll be happy to know that I caught up on The Rookie. So I watched this week's episode plus the one that I hadn't watched, you know, where you were like, Wesley's got PTSD and...
I thought that was the only one you hadn't watched.
No.
Oh, no, that's right. You completely forgot to watch The Rookie.
Right.
Did I watch The Rookie? Was there one on?
Yes, there was.
What was the episode about?
It started off with Chen complaining about how she can't get a man, and then there was that guy in the bar.
Oh, yeah, and at the end he abducted her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
he was the killer that they've been looking for.
You know, that actually wasn't obvious to me.
No?
Yeah, no. I gotta be honest. That wasn't obvious to me. I mean, it became rapidly obvious near the, you know, right before he abducted her and everything.
But yeah. What are you looking at? Because you like got quiet.
I'm actually. I'm in my Netflix account, and usually you can click like what you viewed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to see if I watched the movie, which is that sad that I can't remember because. I did start a couple, and then I was like, well, these are junk.
Yeah.
I'm not watching these. But, yeah, it's looking like I can't find it right now. So I guess...
Okay.
Yeah.
It's okay if you didn't watch any movies.
Recent device streaming activity. Oh, no, that's not it. No, whatever. I mean, I did watch one movie. I watched Freddy vs. Jason. Last Friday was Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So Johnny came over. We watched Never Hike Alone. Have you seen that?
No.
It's the fan-made Friday the 13th movie called Never Hike Alone. It's about a guy who's it's like a YouTube blog vlogger who does these extreme hikes or adventure hikes or whatever.
Okay.
And he, you know, vlogs about it for his followers. And he does one through this state park. And, of course, he ends up kind of going on the rocks. He ends up finding Camp Crystal Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he knows the legend because he heard about it when he was a kid, but he didn't think it was anything that was real about it. And then Jason shows up, and it's actually pretty damn solid. I think the guy's name is Tom. I think Tom Matthews. He played Tommy Jarvis in Part 6,
okay.
Jason Lives.
Yeah, Tommy.
And he's in this. He has like an ambulance driver. And they call him Tommy, but they don't say Jarvis, but in the credits, he's credited as Tommy Jarvis, so...
Okay.
It's kind of neat. And there's actually, they got an Indiegogo going on for another movie called Never Hike Alone in the Snow. And it's a prequel to Never Hike Alone. They have a plan to do a couple more. They've raised like 75 grand.
You know, I got to be honest, the way you were talking and the way you were just like,
yeah.
I thought you were talking about High Cologne.
Never hike alone.
Yeah. And I was hearing never hike alone. Okay. And I'm like,
well, I knew what I was saying, so it sounded normal to me.
What does this have to do with a horror movie? But never hike alone makes a lot more sense.
Yes. Never hike alone. So. But anyhow, it's pretty solid. You should check it out. Cool. It's Womp Stomp Films is who's putting it out.
Okay. And is it on Netflix?
No, it's on YouTube. So the first one's on YouTube. It's like 54 minutes long.
Okay.
And they actually do a really good job with it. I mean, like, with high-definition cameras kind of on the affordable today, like, you put a drone up there, you got your aerial helicopter shot they used to do. Oh, yeah. And
it looks better than most of the old footage used to.
And the special effects are good, and they spent some money on this. Like I said, they have a plan to do more movies, and they have an Indiegogo campaign right now, and they've raised $75,000.
Wow.
On what they want to do. So, and the next one, actually, the Never Hike Alone in the Snow, I enunciated for you.
Well, no, I'm just thinking, in the snow. Well, like, I'm trying to picture the shiny box.
It's because they've always wanted, like, people have clamored for a Friday the 13th movie in the winter, for whatever reason.
Right.
And the one that was supposed to come out, the most recent one they were supposed to make for this whole rights thing came up, where the rights are in battlement, so they couldn't make the movie, was actually supposed to take place in the winter.
Oh, interesting.
So that's why they're kind of doing this one. But the Tom Matthews is in it again, plus one of the cops from Jason Lives is in it, and then the guy that played Jason in the Jason versus Freddy flick is in it as Jason.
Interesting.
Yeah, so they got some actual, like, Friday the 13th alumni, even a guy that played Jason before, so it's kind of cool. If you're a Friday the 13th fan, this is new content that doesn't look like shit.
That's always a good thing.
Remember the Batman vs. Predator trailer that someone made that looked phenomenal?
Yes.
Yeah, except that was like 4 minutes long, five minutes long, whatever. Think of that type of production high quality, except it's an hour long, basically.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with cologne.
Nothing to do with cologne. No, nothing to do with smelling good. As a matter of fact, probably everything smells bad. Rotting corpses.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I did not watch Schooled this week. The Beanie Babies episode.
Oh, that's too bad.
And I actually didn't get around to watching Stumptown.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about Perfect Harmony?
Yes. Oh. I watched that. That was good.
I will say this. Schooled was good.
I believe it.
I won't go into any detail because, again, you know, I'm still impressed that, you know, I won you over to this show last
year. Schooled?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you have to give all the credit in the world to Coach Mellor.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it helped that I binged, so his character grew on me so rapidly.
Right.
Because there was a few episodes in a row where he was the focal point.
Yes.
At first, I was like, this is all right. This is all right. This is fucking amazing. And then I've been a big fan of it ever since.
All I'll say about this episode is, I hope you like fish puns.
I thought it was kind of odd that they did two episodes in a row, like, you know, the Pokemon one and then the...
Yeah,
the Beanie Babies one.
I'm really trying to remind you this is the 90s.
Well, yeah, exactly. So,
did you watch Superstore?
I did.
That was an interesting episode. Did you feel like you missed something?
Yeah.
Like there was an episode missing?
It really did feel like it jumped, it jumped the shark. No,
like all of a sudden they have a union and they're negotiating.
Yes, it felt like that there was something just in the middle there that we missed out on. Because they turned in all the cards, is what we last knew.
Yeah.
But that was it. Because if you think about it, the last episode we got, which was before Thanksgiving, was the curbside pickup episode.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, boom, this one.
Yeah. Where Jonah starts off, like, dressed in a nice three-piece suit, and he's heading up to corporate to negotiate.
Yeah.
And Sandra's coming because she called dibs loudest, and...
It was just weird. It definitely felt like there was an episode missing.
Yep. And as far as episodes go, it was okay.
It was ho-hum.
It didn't really wow me for what I believe is a mid-season finale.
I think it must be the way they ended it.
Yeah, because basically, like, they get everything that they want, and corporate's going to buckle. But
and they're celebrating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody's celebrating except for the fact that, you know, oh, we just found out that corporate got sold out to a bigger company. And so none of it mattered.
Yeah. They got bought out during the negotiations. And so they just said agree to whatever they want because the new company doesn't have to agree to it.
Yep.
Because.
So it doesn't mean that they're not getting anything. Well,
no, technically, essentially, the lawyers agreed to everything after the company got bought out, so the lawyers had no stance to agree to anything.
Right. So the employees aren't getting anything that they asked for there, but they can still go to the new bosses and try to
right.
strong-arm
their,
negotiate whatever.
Their struggle is still ongoing.
And my guess is that what's going to happen is that the new employers are going to come in, and they're going to offer them all this good stuff if they don't unionize.
Right.
And so it's going to cause a struggle. And they're going to be like, well, we worked all so hard to get a union. And but they're going to give us all the stuff that we wanted as long as we don't join a union.
Right. Because, yeah, that definitely seems obvious. I hope they move on from this storyline.
Me too.
There was like two background stories, I guess, if you will. Neither one of them very exciting.
What were they again?
Amy and Cheyenne and Dina go cut down a tree with an axe.
Yeah.
Just from the side of the road.
Yeah.
And then Amy's feeling empowered and nervous because she basically, she's one of those, I have to do it so it's done right. And where she's not in control, she's losing her mind.
Right.
And Jonah's not texting her minute by minute updates of what's going on. So she's freaking out.
Yeah.
And then they drop the tree on the...
Because they can't do Amy anymore unless she's neurotic. She used to be a fun character when she was on the floor because she was like... She was a smartass and she was confident and nothing fazed her.
Yeah, and now she's dumb.
Yeah.
Now she's absurd. Yeah.
Yep.
But she drops the tree from the forklift onto the, I guess, their mini substation cutting power to the store. And then the other mini backstory was Glenn, Mateo, and... Guy in the wheelchair, what's his name?
Garrett.
Garrett. All they get into a competition of selling the worst item.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And it wasn't even enjoyable because they all did stupid things. I found the Tony Danza popcorn maker that will only take Tony Danza popcorn maker cartridges.
Cartridges not included.
Yeah. And you have to, like, call his 800 number or go to his website and email him and he'll send you the cartridges.
Yeah.
I found that amusing.
I found Garrett going, hey, have you ever wanted the ease and convenience of making popcorn complicated tenfold?
Yeah.
Or something like that. And then Glenn's was like, is it a shoe? Is it a gravy boat without a spout? Who knows?
Mateo's was just a dumb oversized sweater with like...
You microwaved it for up to 9 minutes and then you could put it on and it kept you warm.
Yeah. Made you look like the Michelin man.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was dumb.
Yep. Wasn't that good? Perfect Harmony, though.
Perfect Harmony was solid. It was their Christmas episode.
Except that the pastor's parents, you know, the missionary parents who adopt all the kids from around the world, and he was one of them, they came to... visit, and the only reason that they were impressed was because they know who Arthur is, and they were like falling all over him. And now they have a new daughter, you know, another Indian girl. So they thought, oh, you guys can bond together because you're both from India. She learned about Santa.
Yes,
Clay taught her about Santa and how she's going to get presents if she's good, and she can get Murder Car 6 or whatever.
Yeah, Santa's like Jesus Christ, except.
He rewards good behavior.
He rewards good behavior, yeah. And, of course, the parents are like, well, no, Chris, Jesus isn't a thing. But yet the preacher there, he believes in Santa and he even decorated the church with Santa-like things mm-hmm. and tries to hide it from his parents.
And then they end up, like, compromising and showing a good time by doing a Bollywood Christmas thing.
Well, yeah, the parents want to be there to watch Arthur conduct the choir.
Yep.
Which they managed to pull off some pretty amazing songs with little to no prep time, it seems like.
That's whenever you get shows like this or movies like this, that's what they can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Expert choreography without any practice.
So the last minute, of course, they switch it up so he can bond with his sister. And they make it a Bollywood.
Yeah.
Because it starts out traditional and then switches over to like the Bollywood style and she's into it. And they commingle traditional Christmas songs with traditional... religious hymns, and back and forth and forth and back, and it was funny.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yep.
They did Carol of the Bells earlier in the night on the episode, and I thought that was tremendous. But I'm a big fan of that song.
So. Yeah. Did you watch any of that 6-episode Christmas special Moody's?
I put it in my queue, but I haven't watched any of it.
Okay, they've aired all 6 episodes. I've watched all 6.
Yes.
It's decent. Like I said, it's not... There's some comedic parts to it, but it is not what I would call a comedy. It's a dark comedy, if anything.
Yeah.
I thought it was solid. By the end of it, I enjoyed myself. I was glad it was only 6 episodes. I saw what I needed to see.
Yep.
But yeah. I'll also say that I finished Watchmen this week.
Oh, yeah?
Now, this apparently was not the first season. This was the only season. This was meant to be a limited run.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 9 episodes, and they're done. Damn solid. However, I'm going to recant what I said last time. Because last time I said to you, oh, when you do get the chance to sit down and watch it, you've got the advantage. See, I'm tired too tonight.
I'm dragging ass.
Yeah. And I've had a headache all day. We got a new person in. And, well, it's not just that, but, like, I went to my bosses on Friday, and I'm like, hey, this person that you hired 2 weeks ago starts on Monday. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, you want to get her a chair? Maybe a computer?
Yeah.
You know, maybe something.
Oh, I didn't have anything on my first day. Yeah. I mean, they ordered me a chair my first day, but that took, like, a month to come in.
Isn't that nice how, you know, they have time to figure this stuff out and then just...
Here's the worst part. I literally, like, I got the job. I had a 3-week notice I put in. They made me put in.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to start in here in 3 weeks. It's not like they couldn't get a hold of me. I was in the next room.
Right.
Like, exactly. Literally just walk through a door, a key door. You have to key card the door and go in. There's Mike.
Yeah.
Hey, we need to order your chair. What chair do you need? Cool. Hey, we need to get your laptop in here. Cool. You come over and do this real quick? Absolutely. I'm here 70 hours a week.
Yeah.
There's no reason you couldn't have touched base in the last 3 weeks of me to set shit up.
So yeah.
I walk in on my first day in there and not even a chair at my desk.
Yeah.
No computer, laptop, nothing.
But there was a chair at her desk this morning because I came in this morning and went, they still didn't get her a chair. I went and found one and put it in front of her desk. And then she said, yeah, this isn't going to work. This isn't comfortable. I'm like, dude, it's the best you're going to get right now.
There was no chair before you got here.
I said that. I'm like, you're lucky you got something.
Yeah.
I was supposed to switch desks, so I was sitting here, and they wanted me to move over to this one so that she could have my area. And I'm like, well, I've got an automatic, you know, electric desk that raises and lowers, and that's got to come with me. And they, we're going to have to figure that out. We got to get some people up here. So I was like, look, the people are booked solid. I will move over there. She can have my desk for now, and then as soon as you can get somebody in there, they can swap them over. But she starts on Monday. So Friday afternoon, I moved all my stuff over, set it all up. I'm in my new cube. She's now got a space to sit at.
Yeah.
My boss comes in, walks over, goes, wow, you moved over here already? What do you mean already? It's Friday afternoon. She comes in Monday.
Yeah.
I literally waited until the 11th hour to move.
Yeah.
I don't get it. So that's why.
I thought you were going to say they're going to come get your desk.
Oh, no. No.
Oh, tomorrow they're coming to install mine.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, they're installing mine because they put the desk, like, Bruce and Dottie are both, like, 5'3", 5'4", type people. And so the desks are set to there. So, like, it was this one big, not co-desk, but, like, it was the same height all the way around this giant cubicle we are in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, I'm not the tallest person in the world, but I'm 5'9", and it's literally 4 inches too short for me.
Mm-hmm.
For me to be able to sit there comfortably and my knee not lock up or be able to, so instead of just coming over and raising my desk up, they're going to go ahead and order me a new desk. And I thought, great, this will be forever. Because it was like 2 weeks ago I mentioned this.
Yep.
And then I got an email today saying, hey. And then I got an email from the people saying, hey, we'll be there tomorrow to install that. And I'm like, sweet.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping – I don't want them to do like the corner piece and the long desk on my left. I just want them to do that corner piece. All I need is that to raise up and down because that's perfect. Because if – I have to move all the shit on the walls if they do the big side desk on the left, because if I have to want to raise my, you know what I mean? If I want to go to the standing position, I got to move all that shit. And
yep.
I really just need, if I have just the centerpiece, that corner piece, I mean, that raises up and down, it'll be perfect. Mm-hmm. I can, you know, because I will very rarely bring it to a standing position.
Yeah.
Because I have issues with my back and shit from standing too long, and I don't have a relief mat there. I'd just be standing on the thinly carpeted floor.
You can get those relief mats.
I know, but I really just want to raise the desk up 4 fucking inches.
Yeah. I feel your pain. As you know, I'm 6'1".
Yes, yeah.
And I moved over to this desk that was from a woman who was maybe 5'6", if yeah. that. So people walk by and laugh at me and go, wow, you look ridiculous. Because my knees are practically up to my chin where I'm sitting on this desk.
Why did you have to move desks anyways? What was wrong with the desk you were? Is that the...
You really want to know?
Hold on. What's your... I'm an MA2. What's your...
I'm a PA2.
PA2. So is that like, this is the PA1's position, and you're a PA2, so you have to be here.
Pretty much. Except the position that they put me in is yep. a manager position. But they didn't want to have a PA1
sitting
move in a manager's position. So they were like, you move over here. And I'm like, I like my cue. I really do. I like where it is. I like the setup. I've got a pole in it,
yep.
you know, that I can kind of like people can hide behind. I really liked it. And they're like, no, we want you to go over here. And a lot of people are like, oh, you get a window. I'm like, no, I get 2 half windows and I don't even really care. I don't care that it's bigger. I wanted to be in my old cube, but they're insistent. They're like, no, this is a bigger area. So it's going to go to somebody who's higher up. So you know exactly what I'm
talking about. Oh, they're so tight. You're an MA2. He's an MA1. Yes, he's going to be training you on how to do certain things that are MA1 positions, but he doesn't have decision-making capabilities, and you do. That's why you're the MA2 and he's the MA1.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's just that I don't do the politics of these things well. I just don't. Like, oh.
So that's why I have a headache and both of us are dragging ass. But anyway, as I was saying, my original statement to you was...
I don't even know what we were talking about.
You're lucky when you watch Watchmen that you get to watch it all at once. I'm going to recant that and say, if you want to get real enjoyment out of this, spread it out.
Yeah.
Do a couple days in between, maybe a week in between like it was on TV. Because the slow burn pays off really well.
Okay.
Most of the stuff that happens in the last episode is stuff that started in the first episode and you had no idea you were building towards this. They've got things that are going on that you're just like, you don't know until the last episode. And you go, wow, that's really cleverly done. And I think if you watch them all back to back, it would kind of ruin that. So honestly, I'm recommending if anybody wants to check it out, spread it out. Kind of like with The Mandalorian, you know, where it's like we're happy that we're getting it once a week.
Yep.
Do that.
Okay. Well, I'll talk about a new show.
Okay.
Well, real quick, The Conners, it's still solid.
Okay.
They just aired their 10th episode, which is their Christmas one. It's a 19-episode season. I actually think I enjoy the show more without Roseanne.
Nice.
Yeah. Katie Sagal is kind of Dan's new love interest, but they're going slow.
Mm.
But it's Katie Sagal, so she's awesome.
Yes, she is.
But yeah, I actually really I really enjoy it.
Nice.
Yeah. So the wife and I don't judge. We started watching the Netflix original series, Virgin River.
Sorry, what?
It's called Virgin River.
It hasn't showed up on my feed.
Well.
And there's probably a reason, judging by your... It showed
up on... Well, no, you like romance.
I thought you were going to say virgins.
No. Like, no. But you like romance flicks, rom-coms.
Yeah.
Well, there's less com in this, but there's a whole lot of rom.
Mm.
Virgin
it's not like drama rom, is it?
Not extreme.
Okay.
More like Gilmore Girls-ish drama, but okay. not the quirkiness of Gilmore Girls.
Okay.
Virgin River follows Melinda Monroe, who answers an ad to work as a nurse practitioner in remote California town of Virgin River. It's up near the – it's a fictional town, but they mention a lot of real towns around, so it's kind of up near the Oregon border.
Okay.
Thinking it would be the perfect place for a fresh start and leave her painful memories behind, but she soon discovers that small town living isn't quite as simple as she expected.
This sounds like every Hallmark movie ever made.
And she must learn before she can truly make Virgin. And she must learn to heal herself before she can truly make Virgin River her home. Yes, it's similar, but it's not as goofily romantic as
okay.
and goofily drama as the Hallmark movies.
But it's not a movie, it's a series?
No, it's a 10-episode series. Each episode's about 45 minutes.
Okay.
42 minutes, you know how that works.
Mm-hmm.
It stars Alexander Breckenridge.
Okay.
As yep. Melinda Monroe. And she played... she played Moira, the sexy young housekeeper on the first season of American Horror Story.
Yep.
Oh, God, she had some great outfits on in that. She's been in other stuff as well, but that's the one that really I remember the most.
Okay.
All right. She is also Sophie on The Sus.
Oh, yeah.
That
okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sorry, what was the first thing she was in?
She on American Horror Story, Murder House.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was on American Horror Story, Murder House. She played young Moira O'Hara.
Mm, okay.
Who was a sexy young, like, not nurse, but maid.
I remember that, yeah.
She looked real nice. And then Martin Henderson's in it. He's an Australian guy who plays an American. And then the only people really in it I think you'll recognize is Annette O'Toole and Tim Matheson.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So, and then there's a few other people who'd be like, oh, what was she in? Oh, she played the Doctor on Stargate. Holy crap, did she not age well? You know, like,
nice.
Things like that. But no, we've watched 8 of the 10 episodes over this weekend, basically. And we enjoyed it. We enjoyed it.
Thanks.
We've watched a lot of Christmas specials with the kids. You know, Rudolph, Frosty, Mickey's, all that stuff.
Right.
So,
I also watched a new show.
Oh, what's that?
It's it's one that popped up on Hulu for me, and it was like, ooh, you might like this. It's called Reprisal.
Okay. I was going to talk about that, because I watched the first episode.
I watched the first episode as well.
Are you planning on watching more?
Nope.
Either am I.
The fuck was going on?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know if half of it was a flash forward and half of it was a flashback. And she had the worst looking hair because, I'm sorry, she's a very attractive woman, but she has the darkest eyebrows and the darkest roots. And to dye her hair that blonde.
It was so deceptive because, like, the boyfriend's car is like a 1950s roadster.
Yeah.
And her style of clothing she had when the show started, I thought it was the 50s.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, no, this is, like, current times,
wait,
maybe?
You mean when the show started and she showed up in the junkyard and they tied chains around her wrists and dragged her behind a truck and she was just fine with it? You mean that beginning of the show?
Well, no,
or when the show actually began?
I mean, that beginning of the show should have been people were dead.
Yeah.
And now I guess they're going to kill her. I don't know, maybe not. But then the next scene you see is her alive with blonde hair, and she's married to some old dude that's dying.
But he's like a gangster or something?
Oh, well, the business was laundering money.
Yeah, and then Hellboy beats the shit out of her.
Yeah, Ron Perlman beats her up, and she signs the paperwork. I don't fucking know.
But notice she reached up at one point and touched the back of her neck so that you could see the scars on her neck?
Yeah.
I guess that's to remind you that she did get dragged by the truck?
I don't know. I mean, this is the... Reprisal Falls, relentless femme fatale who, after being left for dead, leads a vengeful campaign against a bombastic gang of gearheads.
Okay, we never saw her get left for dead. I kept thinking that I had missed something and that I had gone into the second episode because it never fucking ended.
Yeah, I don't know.
And there's like two gangs, but then like inside one of the gangs, there's another gang called the Three River Phoenixes. But there's four of them.
Yeah.
And they all have to get a tattoo on their neck that looks like three wavy lines, like a river. But she's really actually, like, one of them may be embedded in there at her command because, like, she calls and leaves a voicemail for him. But she calls his flip phone from a landline, like, that looks like a 1950s phone.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad that I wasn't the only one who found this, like,
I mean, if you look at the description here on IMDb,
yeah,
it says years after being left for dead by her brother and his gang, the Banished Brawlers, Catherine Harlow reemerges as Doris and begins to plot her revenge. Meanwhile, a kid named Ethan is in over his head when he joins the Brawlers' world of the Bangarang.
Yeah, because there's like 7 bangarangs around, but this is the original bangarang. You're only allowed to get in if you have a ticket. So these guys show up with duffel bags filled with the tickets to different businesses and then take out duffel bags filled with cash that people got because people bought the tickets to go.
It's fucking dumb.
Yeah.
It's so convolutedly stupid. And it's like the same, hey, we're going to do a 1950s style gang flick with stupid 1950s gang names that are bad, but it's going to be 2019. Maybe. It's going to be ambiguous to the year.
Yeah. And we'll make sure that you know that everybody's bad because they'll wear sleeveless shirts and smoke like chimneys.
Yeah.
That's how you can tell that this is a seedy neighborhood is everybody's smoking.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the time.
All right.
And there's that one guy who was in Gotham, and he was also in Ant-Man, and he's a really good actor, but, you know, nobody ever knows what to do with him, so we'll just make him, you know, the one guy who gets his ass kicked at the bar but then walks out because, you know, he's too cool for that.
Yep. Yeah, no, I watched the first episode, and I just, what the fuck did I just watch? I can't think of, there was not a single moment in the episode where I decided, oh, I can't wait to watch the next one.
No, me either.
I'm curious what's going on here. It was all like, why? Just why? What else did you watch?
For shows?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Like we haven't said, talked about the rookie yet.
Yeah, we haven't talked about the rookie. So I watched that first episode, the guy who lived in Nolan's house and, you know, now wants to reconnect with his wife. And
yep.
Wesley has PTSD and still has it in the next episode because, you know, he's drinking and mixing drugs.
He justifiably has PTSD.
Yeah, because he got stabbed, like, yesterday.
Yeah.
But
he's not dealing with it.
No,
proper.
He's drinking and lying to his girlfriend, who's a cop.
Which, I don't know if I like the fact that I'm seeing that character that vulnerable.
It's not, for me, it's not that he's vulnerable. It's...
No, not Wesley.
Oh, her.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's gone from being very tough to being very emotional. Very girlfriendy, I guess. And I'm not saying that she can't be that way. I'm not saying she has to just be the rough and tumble cop, but I don't know. It's not the greatest thing.
No.
Harper gets she's got an overnight visit with her daughter. I'm already tired.
I'm tired of this. Oh, my daughter's coming. How about I go undercover again? And I love that Nolan calls her out in the, are you self-sabotaging so you don't get your daughter?
Yeah, exactly. Because
even though you're not undercover anymore, you sure seem to find a reason to go undercover a lot. Like.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's going, plot holes. Here are our plot holes, everybody. Plot holes.
Now, tell me. Yeah, I'm sick of that. I'm sick of them finding ways to put her undercover every other episode.
Yeah.
The next episode, though, The Dark Side.
Yep.
I love this episode tremendously.
It was good.
And tell me that when they revealed, you know, they're like, oh, here's the unicorn, the female serial killer. And it was the villainess from the last season of Timeless.
Yeah.
Tell me you didn't want there to somehow be a Timeless tie in there.
Well, of course I did.
Because then we just saw Abigail Spencer on this god-awful reprisal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wanted, like, Rufus or somebody to be in this episode just as, like, do I know you? Because she was a villainess in that one. She's a serial killer in this one. It would have made perfect sense.
It would have been nice.
But they didn't tip the hat. I felt bad. Otherwise, I really liked the episode. You know, I liked that there was a lot more going on, because there always is. But her leading them around to the different places that she killed people. You knew she was going to win out in the end, though, because that's how all of these things go. They all set up like that.
Yep. She somehow had communicated through the library, I guess, with people by checking out books and leaving notes in the books, which... You know, someone solved that cipher very easily. But the notes in the books about
Yeah, it was not a very complex cipher at all. Dumb. It was like, oh, just look at the page number and the words. And
but anyway, she left messages for people on where to bury new victims. But we never found out what her end game was, and you know what I mean? Like, why she was doing it. So, whatever. But in the end, Chen gets kidnapped by some new guy that she meets at a bar. After Bradford goes all dad on her and questions the guy.
Dude, he like
it's hilarious.
Grabbed the phone number right out of his hand.
So he gets kidnapped. She gets kidnapped at the end, and that's where we're left.
Yeah. That wasn't the finale, season finale, was it?
That had to have been the fall finale.
It was, yeah, December 8th. So we don't get another one until February.
Yeah.
Did you watch Blacklist?
Oh, I did, yeah, yeah. Fuck that show.
I was so happy thinking, finally, we're going to be done with the Katerina Rostova story.
Fuck jeez, that show.
We can finally put that to bed. And oh, of course, she fucking faked the whole thing. God damn it.
Yeah, so Liz, so obviously the episode picked right up where the last one left off, where Liz has got Katerina Rostova at gunpoint. And basically, Katerina just reveals the whole story to her.
But not even the whole story.
Well, no, but her henchman shows up and they knock Liz out and then handcuff her to like a fucking pole in the other apartment.
And then say, oh, he shouldn't have done that. That was not nice of him.
But basically, she's like, oh, no, Red isn't Elia. Elia's here, see? I'm trying to get information out of him. Yada, yada, yada.
I'm torturing this man to get information out of him.
Yeah, and Liz,
love
like,
me.
Liz is like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to help you escape now.
Yeah.
Because they discovered who she really is. And Liz, of course, there's underground tunnels that lead to this, that her and Tom cut a hole through the wall so it goes into the sewer system or whatever it is, and yada, yada, yada. So everybody escapes. But Reddington, of course, sees Katerina and follows her. And then a couple of hitmen show up and gun her down in the street and drag her dead body away.
Because they're going to collect the bounty.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, and Katerina tells Elizabeth the whole her side of the story that we saw, how Ilya and Dom set her up to be killed to save Masha and or Liz and yada yada, and Reddington's really not Elia, and on and on and on. And then Red tells her that the woman's dead, but you know, that your nanny, your fake nanny there's dead, gunned down in the street. She was the woman that tried to kidnap me in Paris, but doesn't tell her that it was Katerina.
Mm-hmm.
And then Katerina conveniently calls Liz straight away. Did he buy it? What do you mean you're alive? Yeah. The best part of this whole episode, the absolute best part of this whole episode, is when Liz is when Denbei is driving Red and Park around in the car after they did whatever they did and before he finds out about Katerina being the neighbor,
because
she's the one that told him. And he turns and looks and goes, Park, how long have you been here? She's like, the whole time. And he's just like, are we giving you a ride somewhere? Like, he's just completely perplexed. It doesn't even realize.
Because he's just sitting there, like, rattling on about, like, what he's thinking and what's going on. And she's like, oh, you're looking. He's like, whoa, what are you doing here?
Well, how long have you been here? The whole time. Are we giving you a ride someplace? That was hilarious.
Yep.
I found that part to be extra funny.
Yep.
But otherwise, you know, I just...
I'm just about done. I've got a lot of stuff that I watch. I would not be sad if this one went away.
Yeah.
And it's too bad because I love James Spader.
Yeah. Oh, I love James Spader as well.
But Jesus.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I was not impressed with this at all.
No. Aside from that, I didn't watch any of the shows other than what we're going to say for the spoiler section, which is The Mandalorian, Mr. Robot, and Crisis.
Okay.
I have a lot of fucking notes on Crisis. Other than that, though, if you want to save those to the spoilery section.
Yeah, we should save those to the spoilery section. But I did hear something on the ride into work this morning that I wanted to relay to you.
Is this new stuff? Or?
It's kind of new stuff. Okay. It's
hit me up.
Well, okay. So, have you ever heard of Salon Magazine?
Yep.
Okay. I had until this morning.
Okay.
So apparently a couple days back, they released the top 10, or actually top 15 shows of the best TV of the decade from 2010 to 2019.
Okay.
And just hearing them name them off this morning, they only did the top 10. I just can't agree.
Okay.
And I wanted to run it by you.
All right. So this is the top 10 shows of the decade.
Actually, this list on their website is top 15. So okay. I'll do the top 15.
Okay.
Number 15, Downton Abbey. I can't complain about that.
Right.
People loved that show.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, it got my mother to the theater. Yeah. So that says a lot right there.
Number 14, Hannibal on NBC.
My sister swears by that show. She says it is one of the best shows she has seen in forever.
Well, it only made it 2 seasons, so...
I'm going to check it out. It's Mads Mikkelsen.
Well, I just saw that Mads Mikkelsen is Hannibal Lecter. That does make me want to watch it.
Yep.
Number 13, RuPaul's Drag Race.
Jesus. It's a phenomenon.
People I've never watched a single episode. Number 12, Parks and Rec.
I can understand them saying that because there are people out there who are diehard Parks and Rec fans, just like The Office.
Yep. Well, I so far, really, other than Downton Abbey, I can't relate to this list at all so far.
I don't watch all of these shows, but I can understand.
I can't even understand because I don't watch any of them, and I haven't really heard a lot about, I don't know. Number 11, I agree with this one, The Good Place.
Yes.
Yeah, I can get behind that one. So, okay, here we go. Number 10. Atlanta, the Donald Glover show on FX.
Yep, I'm aware.
Never watched an episode.
I don't know. Again, I've heard good stuff, but for the decade, though?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know what's not on this list?
What's that?
Game of Thrones.
Really?
Yeah.
That is surprising.
Number 9, The Good Wife.
Again, I've heard a lot of good stuff, but I can't get behind that because why?
Number 8 is not even a TV series. It was a TV miniseries or a television event, I think. The People versus O.J. Simpson, an American crime story.
Keep that shit off. That can't be the best TV of the decade.
Now, I can agree with this one. Number 7, Justified.
Okay.
I mean, I can agree with it because I really enjoyed the show, but was it one of the best shows of the decade? I don't know, but I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think Hell on Wheels is on this list. I freaking loved that show. I don't think you ever watched an episode.
I did not.
Okay. Number 6, Insecure. I've never even heard of this.
Do they give a rundown of it? Or
Issa Rae is far from the first YouTube star to cross over to TV, but she is one of the most creative and emotionally intelligent web series stars to make a mark in auteur TV space. It was on HBO. The ongoing adventures of Issa and her best friend Molly, or a cast of friends surrounding them, helped establish a forum for the voices of young black women to be heard, appreciated, and more than this, understood. I've never even heard of this show.
Hmm.
And it's on HBO.
Interesting.
Number 5. Rectify from Sundance TV. Never heard of this show.
Me either.
Sundance's first original scripted series lasted 4 seasons, each one of them a gift. Okay. In no small part owing to the fact that it was so low rated that the cable channel would have been well within its rights to cancel it. Rectify is a family story of redemption of a redemption tale merged into a complex and lovely tale that intersects reality and doubt. Daniel's life is, I don't know, who gives a fuck. Number 4, I can agree with this. Better Call Saul. I've never watched an episode, but people seem to love it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what's not on here? Breaking Bad.
Interesting.
Yeah. Number 3, this surprised the fuck out of me. And as much as you and I enjoyed this, I don't think it deserves to be on this list.
Okay.
Fleabag.
Really?
That's the number 3 top show of the decade, according to this.
Okay.
I mean, think about the thousands of TV shows that have been on this decade in all the channels. Because this is not just doing network. This is an Amazon original. You know, they did Amazon. They've done, you know, I mean, it's just. Number 2, The Americans. That FX spy show.
Mm-hmm. I've heard nothing but good about that. I want to watch that show,
yeah.
And I can believe it based on what I've heard from people. Another one that my sister absolutely swears by.
Number one. Well, before we do that, let's give it – they have a section of obligatory shout-outs.
Now, I just want to go on record here as you're saying that. I'm looking this up. Salon Magazine is not exactly Time or Newsweek.
Fine. Fair enough. But still, this is a list that people are talking about. I heard it on the radio this morning. So, okay. They give a shout-out to Terriers. I don't know what that is.
Like, it's a show?
Yes. Okay. I don't know.
All right.
And then very honorable mentions, Key and Peele, Broad City, Drunk History.
Those are honorable mentions?
BoJack Horseman, Orange is the New Black, Spartacus, Banshee, Portlandia, Luther, Orphan Black, Rick and Morty, Archer, Better Things, Boardwalk Empire, Bob's Burgers, The Walking Dead. Oh, we had some good ones. We had some good times for a while, so even less than honorable mention, they're giving The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, Revenge, and Pretty Little Liars. As the person who wrote this name is a Melanie McFarlane. I would trust nothing she says.
I would trust nothing either.
The fact
that honorable mentions went to things like Key and Peele and Rick and Morty, yeah, and Broad City.
Yeah.
Fuck her.
Number one, The Leftovers. This is her number one television show of the decade.
So, the other night, I went to dinner with my buddy Sam. And he and I have conversations like you and I do, where we start off talking about one thing, and then it kind of spirals into something else.
Yeah.
And we were talking shows, and we were talking specifically like Watchmen. And Watchmen right now is his favorite show of the decade. Like, it was his favorite thing. He loves it.
Okay.
But we were talking Crisis. We were talking some of the other shows that you and I watch. And he actually made a pitch to me for The Leftovers. He told me that the first few episodes are kind of rough. He said, but he says, if you push through it and you watch the whole thing, he said, it is phenomenal.
I did watch the first few episodes. And I think what ended up happening was is I ended up canceling my HBO because Game of Thrones was over. And it was like, I don't like it enough to want to spend $15 a month to watch it.
Gotcha. I've never gotten into it. But he made a pretty compelling argument. I'm not saying it belongs as number one on the list, but I'm just saying that that's what I've heard very recently. So,
yeah, I just, Anyways, you had some news yourself?
I had some news, a trailer, and a couple of movies.
All right, go ahead.
Disenchantment is officially coming to Netflix for its third season in 2020.
I was waiting for you to say third and final.
They didn't say anything about final.
Yeah.
It
wouldn't have surprised me if they did.
Clerks is being added to the National Film Registry.
That doesn't surprise me.
Nope. Had a good discussion with Sam about that, too. And, you know, Clerks, for all that Kevin Smith is a crazy wackadoo these days, Clerks remains a masterpiece, yep, as far as I'm concerned. Not only that, but like I told Sam, it's the fact that Kevin Smith did what you and I have talked about, or what other people have talked about. He was just a schlub working at a video store and said, I could do what they do there.
Yep.
And he bankrolled it himself and then did it. So, you know, kudos to him for that.
And I got to give him all the credit in the world for that. But his latest shit, I just...
Yeah, yeah. Picard.
Yeah.
Is officially renewed for season two with a bigger budget.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so they're already going for broke on this. And then they've got other Star Trek things. Like I said, they're working on that Section 31 show, the Lower Decks,
yep,
the Short Treks. CBS is really banking on the fact that they have a market corner.
Well,
on Star Trek.
I'll tell you what. As soon as that second third season of Discovery launches and Picard season one hits there and Twilight Zone season two hits, they're going to get another $10 out of me.
Yep.
So,
trailers. Like I said, I sent you that one for the full official trailer for season two of You.
Did we talk about Wonder Woman 84 season trailer last week, or did it just come out this week?
Let me check because I've got them all written down. Yes, Wonder Woman 84 was discussed last week.
Okay. The music in the background. Okay.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
I
fucking loved it, but that's a song. Mm-hmm.
it's just it's an instrumental version of like
tell me how
does it feel? Yeah, which I so I had that song itself is 7 minutes long. But yeah, no, that Wonder Woman 84 is awesome. The U trailer.
U. Season 2.
Yep.
We're finally meeting Candace.
Yep.
For real, for full.
Yep.
And it seems, is she the villain or is she the hero?
He's the villain.
Trying to stop, you know, Joe. Yeah.
Will?
Joe, Will, Ted.
I'll say this. The teaser, I was like, oh, whatever. Didn't do anything for me because I know I want to watch the show. Yep. This trailer, though, oh.
This trailer made me want to go back and rewatch the first season before
watching. Same here. Season. And the cover of Freak they used in the trailer, tremendous.
Bad ass.
Yeah, tremendous. Excellent usage of a cover song there.
Yes.
Not Waterworld, Westworld have they used. I loved Westworld's, like, piano versions of the songs yes. they did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, brilliant stuff. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing how they're going to build on the success of the first one. Because it's a yep. new city, it's new yep. girl, it's new people. So they could do one of two things. They could either have a repeat of the first season, yep. you know, where we see his obsession, we see his, you know, overprotectiveness and such, or they could just build in the complete opposite direction. And yeah, I don't know. I'm just really stoked, especially like you said, after that trailer. See, I did like the teaser just because I liked listening to him take apart all the people that he was looking at. But boy, this trailer, this sold me. Like, I'm excited. I want to rewatch that first season.
I mean, I liked the teaser, but it didn't really, it didn't excite me like it did you. It was just like, all right, cool. It's coming back finally. Yep. But this trailer was like, woo.
So I watched two movies.
I have a trailer as well.
Oh, what you got?
I just never shared it with you.
What you got? Jerk.
I'm a jerk, yeah. Underwater?
Yeah, I have no interest in that.
Okay, so I know it stars Kristen, I ruin fucking movies, Stewart.
I'm sorry. Bleach blonde head shaved Kristen, I ruin movies, Stewart.
However, I don't know. There's something about it. It's, you know, if you think about it, it's called Underwater. It's a crew of underwater researchers must scramble to safety after an earthquake devastates the subterranean laboratory they're in. And it's kind of neat because of the fact that, you know, we don't know what's down there. The Earth, as they say in the trail, like, the Earth is, what, 75% water and 90% unexplored.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And so it looked kind of cool because it looked like a movie. It looked like an outer space movie, but it's underwater, you know? So, I don't know. I thought the trailer looked kind of cool. I'm not going to go to the movie theater and see it.
No.
By any means. But when it hits Redbox, I'll watch it. So.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen that trailer and it didn't do anything for me. So
fair enough. So what movies you watch?
I watched a movie called Marriage Story.
Oh, the one with Adam Driver and,
yes.
and
what's her name? Scarlett Johansson.
Yes, Netflix.
Yep. The movie, if you've seen the trailer, they had two separate trailers. One was him talking about her, saying all the things that he loved about
yes.
her. One was her talking about all the things she loved about him. Those two dialogues are in the very beginning of this movie.
Yep.
That is the opening of the movie.
Okay.
And then right after that, we find out that they are sitting in a therapist's office.
Makes sense.
And he's asking them to read what they've written. And she's like, I don't want to read it. And they're basically getting a divorce.
Yes.
And this is just the mediation to try to,
right.
you know, make things go smoothly.
The uncoupling process, yeah. if you will.
Yeah. So beyond that, it's 2 hours that I will never get back in my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I wanted to watch it, and that's disappointing to hear.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, you've been through a divorce.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You are still going through a divorce.
Kind
of. You will still be going through this divorce for the rest of your life until your kids graduate from high school and you no longer have to have contact with your wife.
I hope I'm still fucking alive in 8 years, thank you.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is, you know,
when you said the rest of your life, I'm like, well, I hope I'm not, that's not 8 years.
Well, the thing is,
because I got more shit to do then.
But then you've got things like when Kanan gets married, when Addison graduates from college. You know, you will meet up with their mother, or you will at least have to see her there. Or
she will never be out of my life as long as she's alive, or unless she, you know, runs away.
So watching two people get divorced, and basically the movie will vacillate back and forth between showing his stuff, showing her stuff. They're both not great people.
Yeah.
They're not miserable, terrible people, but they're not great people. I will say this. It felt very real, to the point where I've never been through a divorce, but I kind of technically was.
Yeah, you kind of got divorced. Well, yeah, you went through emotionally.
Yes, because I didn't have to have lawyers involved, and I'm still making payments.
Right. Legally, and I don't have any more contact. But emotionally, you did. Yeah.
So if you've been through a particularly tough breakup or a divorce, or you've been with somebody for a long time and you've separated from them, this is going to remind you of a lot of that stuff.
Oh, I don't want to watch that.
They, like I said, this is very realistic. They talk about money. They talk about child support. They talk about, like, you watch him trying to take their son and you know, have a day with him while he's also looking for lawyers because he has to have a lawyer. Yeah. Because the lawyer calls him, her lawyer calls him up and says, look, we gave you that paperwork 30 days ago. Legally, you have to file it within 30 days, or we get to take everything, and we get to set child support to the maximum, and we get to take sole custody. And, you know, it's listening to the deviousness of these lawyers who will sit there in one scene and be like, oh, how's the kids? How you doing? Blah, blah, blah. All right, now what we want is this and blah, blah. Oh, you're an asshole. It was not enjoyable.
Yeah, I don't want to watch that.
I don't think you would. I honestly, like,
I'm sure it's real, but I don't want to watch that.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you've been through that kind of stuff. You would probably watch this and be like, wow, this is bringing up some pretty shitty memories.
Yep.
So I can't really recommend it to a lot of people. I know it's getting all these awards. I know that everybody's like praising it and saying how good it is. I don't feel that way.
Okay.
The other movie that I watched, and bear with me on this one, okay? Please bear with me.
Okay.
I watched Six Underground.
The show is over. Okay. Okay, I'm sorry, hold on. I heard Jeremy posted, well, Six Underground is the most Michael Bay movie I've ever seen, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And we could go back 2 or 3 days in my Facebook chat with him when I said that to him.
Yeah.
He stole it. Ugh. That's right, Meringue, you're a thief.
Well, you didn't publicly post that you thought this is the most Michael Bay movie you've ever seen.
I told him that the trailer looked like the most
Michael Bay. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. You knew what you were getting into.
Exactly. And that's why I said bear with me.
So it's acceptable.
I have a lot of shit to say about this.
Because guess what? I'm going to watch it.
Yes. And I hope you do. Okay?
So maybe you should wait.
Oh, no. No. I just have to say one thing right off.
Because I love Ryan Reynolds. I have to watch it.
I know. I am going to say this one thing. And I want you to watch this movie and see if you think I'm right.
Okay.
Michael Bay does not exist. Michael Bay is a pseudonym that they use for whatever 11-year-old they grab off the street who is sitting on his friend's shoulders wearing a trench coat and writes these movies. And I am not even half joking. If this movie was not written by a preteen boy, I will eat my own shit, okay?
Jesus.
Dude, when you watch this movie, try not to see an 11-year-old boy going, and then they do that, and then, what if we do? Ah. It is phenomenal. This movie is amazing for being so awful. Oh, it is over the top, beautifully, ridiculously fucking terrible. Please watch this movie and let us talk.
Dude, do you know who wrote this movie?
Michael Bay.
No, he did not. Michael Bay directed it.
Okay.
Fucking Paul Wernick and Rhett Reese wrote this movie. Do you know what they wrote?
I do. I just can't think of it off the top of my head.
Deadpool 1 and 2.
Okay.
They wrote Deadpool.
Yeah.
They wrote Zombieland, G.I. Joe Retaliation. They wrote Life. They wrote Zombieland Double Tap.
So they really like...
They're writing the new Clue movie.
Okay. So here's the thing.
They wrote Watch Dogs.
What?
They wrote the movie based on the video game Watch Dogs.
There's a movie?
Evidently, there's a movie coming out to be announced, but they wrote the script for it.
Well, fuck. I wonder which Watch Dog it is. Wow. Huh. Interesting. I stand by what I said. Michael Bay does not exist. It's two 11-year-olds on each other's shoulders in a trench coat. And I refuse to be proved wrong. Like, I'm sorry that what they wrote became this.
Dude, the tagline is, they say no one can save the world. Meet no one. Right away, you know, this is shit.
Oh, dude.
This is drizzling Hershey squirts shit.
This is 20 people all having the drizzling Hershey squirts. And it is, dude, okay, the Expendables.
Yeah.
You know how the Expendables essentially made fun of itself? Like, it knew what it was.
Yeah.
This is the Expendables with 10 times the budget and no idea that it is as shitty as it is. Like, no self-awareness. Like, it's phenomenally awful. Like, I was glued to it because of how shitty this movie is. And I don't even mean shitty like Mystery Science Theater 3000. I mean, like, holy fuck, Michael Bay just went and jizzed all over this movie. Please watch this movie. And then we can talk about it. I may watch it a second time. Just so that I'll be fresh to talk about it.
Okay. Hey, did you know that Ryan Reynolds has got a sequel to The Hitman's Bodyguard coming out?
Yes.
Called The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard?
Yes. And I couldn't be more excited. Of course.
Ryan Reynolds, Samuel L. Jackson, Salma Hayek, Frank Grillo, Richard Grant, Antonio Banderas, Morgan Freeman.
Oh, my God.
I want to hear Morgan Freeman and Samuel L. Jackson have a motherfuck off.
I do, too. Now that you've said it, I want that. But think about it. The Hitman's wife was Salma Hayek, and she was more of a badass than he was.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that this was a thing.
I didn't know that Paul Wernick wrote this movie. I believe that Michael Bay directed it, though.
He did. He did direct it. He directed the fuck out of it.
Oh, beyond what you can even imagine, my friend.
All right. Well, let's get into the spoiler-ish part of the show.
Yeah, because we've already talked for an hour.
And I'm having back spasms.
Yeah.
So, again, we're going to talk about Crisis on Infinite Earths, Mandalorian, and Mr. Robot.
Yes.
If you want to hear about that?
Here it goes.
Pause it now. If you do want to hear about it,
don't pause it now.
Don't pause it now. Yeah. Which one do you talk about first?
Mandalorian was the shortest.
Okay.
What'd you think about The Mandalorian this week? Because last week we had The Gunslinger, which was, you know, probably the worst episode.
Okay, so last week, Mr. Robot and Mandalorian are both, those are shows I watched this week.
Exactly.
I really enjoyed this week's episode of The Mandalorian.
I did too, with one caveat.
What?
Gian.
What about him?
Her.
Oh, what about her?
The actress was way over the top.
Oh, it was.
She was ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, she's a way over the top actress anyway.
Excessive.
Yeah. And as my sister pointed out, if you have pointed teeth and you were born with pointed teeth and your race has pointed teeth, you're not going to treat them like they're a weapon. You're going to treat them like they're your fucking teeth.
Yep.
So, you know, you and I, we have pointed canines, but we're not running around looking at people going like we're going to bite them. That was ridiculous.
Right. Yep.
Her and her brother both seem to be in love with their pointed teeth that are just what they're born with. Anyway. So
Mandalorian context ran for some work.
Good old fashioned. Let's get a team together and let's do some bad guy stuff.
Basically, it's exactly what it was. And so Rand's like, hey.
Which, honestly, we've been waiting for.
Yeah, but he needs Mandalorian ship for a 5-man job. And he's enjoyed by ex-Imperial sharpshooter Mayfield.
Who was played by Bill Burr, I believe.
Yeah, Bill Burr. And then Berg, who was played by, not Ron Perlman, but the other guy, Clancy Brown.
Yeah.
And then the droid pilot Q9-0, and then, like you said, Jan, and then they rescue Jan's brother, Quinn. So they go on
By the way, Zero, the droid that was their pilot, that was Richard Ayoade, who was the guy from the IT Crowd.
Oh.
One with the weird hair.
Okay, cool.
I thought his voice sounded familiar.
So basically, they need Mandalorian ship to go and find, go to this prison of the New Republic, where there's only droids on board.
Yeah. Don't worry, there's only droids. You must love that, Mando. You still hate him?
I fucking hate that they call him Mando. Mm. But I still love the show.
Absolutely.
So, of course, you know, they get to the spaceship, and along the way, of course, Berg is being too nosy, and ends up finding Baby Yoda. Or the child, as they refer to Baby Yoda, the child.
Yes.
So, of course, it's like, hey, it's the child. How about I keep this kid? Which is so dumbly random. Oh, you have a small child on your ship? I'm going to keep him. No, it doesn't. No, people don't do that. If it would have been like, oh, is that the fucking thing that you stole? I'm going to keep it and kill you. Like, that makes sense more so. Well, but whatever. So they infiltrate the prison. They fight off a bunch of security droids. They make it to the control room where there is a human who they do a Mexican standoff for a while. And then
that was the weirdest Mexican standoff because like it was one guy with one gun.
Yeah.
And then everybody else pulled out two guns to cover him and everybody else.
And the Mandalorian basically shows everyone that he's a badass because he kills a bunch of droids in a very violently cool way.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Like, shows up behind them and, you know, uses his grapple gun and yeah.
He just kills the hell out of them. And then they end up killing, Jean kills the New Republic guard.
Yeah, with a knife.
And Mandalorian is not okay with it. Yeah,
he had a little tracker, basically.
Yeah.
And if he pressed the button, then a New Republic squad was going to show up and just kill them.
It was basically like,
Yep.
And so now they have like 20 minutes to get out of there. So they go rescue Jean's brother and Ken.
Yeah, Chin.
Chin. And then, of course, they double cross the Mandalorian and shove him in the cell.
But it's because he got what he deserved.
Because, evidently, Kim and Ken have background issues.
Right.
In the interim, on the ship itself, the droid kind of stumbles across Baby Yoda and I guess decides to kill it.
Oh, my God. Well, no, because he heard the message
from
Carl Weathers.
That's right.
And he was like, you know, as soon as you get it, bring it back here. And he's like, oh, this is interesting. So he decides he's going to, you know.
That's right. I forgot about that. So that actually does make more sense now.
And then we got arguably the coolest scene in the entire episode, which was the droid steps in, pulls the blaster rifle on Baby Yoda, points it at him. Baby Yoda closes his eyes, puts his hand up like this, and the droid's head explodes. And he just like pulls his hand out and looks at him like, did I do that? No, it was the Mandalorian. But it was just so awesome. I was like,
In the interim, though, before all that, the Mandalorian escapes from his cell, of course.
By luring a robot there, ripping its arm off through the door, and then using the, you know,
the device to unlock the door. And then defeats each member of the crew. Three of the four. The three that came with him. Defeats them all. Locks them in a cell, we find out later.
Yep.
Leaves them alive, though. It's implied that he killed them all.
Which, okay. Now, I had a question about this one, too.
Yeah.
Because the muscle there, now granted, he was fine with the fire. That's whatever. That's part of his species. But the Mandalorian rigs it so that a door drops on him. Like, wham! Yeah. And then he stands up holding it on his shoulders. He's like, and then the side door is, and it looks like they squish him.
Yeah, I thought he was dead.
And I laughed.
I did too.
And then he's fine. He's in the cell with the rest of them, pacing back and forth.
Yeah. I was surprised as well. So he delivers. So he catches up to Ken and Chin's like, "I'll pay you whatever Rand's paying you. I'll triple it, or you can have their shares."
If you kill me, you don't get paid.
Yeah, and and Mandalorian, and basically he's like, you're just going to leave your sister here and others? Yeah. no wonder your family sucks, basically. Right. Delivers him to Ran, and then as he's flying out, Ran's just like, all right, blow him out of the sky.
Yep. 'Cause
he's going to turn on the Mandalorian after paying him.
Right. And a ship comes up to, launch.
A gunner ship. But in the interim, they find out that he put the beacon on them, on Chin, mm-hmm. and three X-Wings show up.
Yep.
And did you see the little...
I like how they actually said, are those New Republic X-Wings?
Yep. Did you see the little thing about who the three people were?
No.
Okay, so the three pilots were like Deborah Chow, Rick Fumiyami, and I think Dave Filoni or something like that. It's okay. All people that have directed episodes.
Oh, nice.
And also are developing the... I'm an asshole. Obi-Wan Kenobi series.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's so cool. That was kind of neat, yeah. But yeah, the X-Wings show up and blast the shit out of them.
Yep. Blow the whole station up. Yeah. They're like, no, we're not going to mess around.
And my favorite part was kind of at the end where Baby Yoda is now in the cockpit with the Mandalorian again. He gives him the little ball off and he goes, yeah, you're right. That was a bad idea.
Which Baby Yoda still hasn't even spoken yet, right. Other than little gurgles and coos.
Yeah, you're right. That was a bad idea. So there's two episodes left.
Uh-huh.
The next episode airs this Wednesday.
Yes.
And we talked about this, and I haven't read anything online, but my assumption is it's airing Wednesday because the new Star Wars movie comes out on Friday.
Right.
So is there correlation to the series in that?
I'm not taking a risk. I'm watching.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Because the series isn't over.
Nope.
There's one more episode after Wednesday, which is the 27th.
I feel like at the very least, we're going to get something like what they did with Winter Soldier, where S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of bled in there. You know, we got to see the tail end of S.H.I.E.L.D. was one of the scenes of Winter Soldier.
But unless the Mandalorian fast forwards 30 years,
the
timeline doesn't line up.
It could be something as simple as like seeing the Mandalorian's armor on display somewhere. You know,
okay, right.
I'm thinking something simple. We're not going to get like a crossover. We might see Baby Yoda.
Well, that was my assumption. That was my thought process behind it. But by the way, I am super excited about Friday night.
I am too.
I'm really looking forward to it.
It's here already.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it as the final, the final Skywalker story.
Yeah.
And allegedly, future Star Trek movies, Star Wars movies. Fuck.
Wow.
I'm having back spasms and I'm tired. Are, at least I didn't say they were the same thing,
mm-hmm.
Are not going to be trilogies is something I read today, which, whatever.
Yeah.
As long as the story's good, I don't care.
Right.
Rogue One wasn't a trilogy. It was phenomenal. Yeah. Mandalorian's amazing. I can't wait for Obi-Wan Kenobi. I just kind of wish I'd have to wait so long.
I know.
Yeah, I enjoyed this week's episode.
So what do you want to talk about next?
Mr. Robot.
Okay. So you did not like this episode. You've had a little time to think about it.
It's not that I didn't like the episode. Okay. I'll let you run it down.
Okay.
It was the ending.
Well, one thing that they did wrong in this episode, I think, is they did that previously on Mr. Robot in the beginning, and they immediately talked about two or three different parts throughout the entire series where White Rose or somebody else has mentioned something about a different world. And so it kind of tipped its hand to what was going on in this episode. So we start off, Elliot, basically, we see the scene where Darlene and Dom are at the hotel with Elliot. And so we see it from his point of view. And then he basically, okay, first off, how cool was it that Darlene said goodbye and hugged him and walked away and got like three car lengths away? And then looked over and saw Mr. Robot sitting on a car and said,
yes,
I kind of started getting used to you once you stopped being such an asshole.
Yeah, I kind of started liking you or something. Yeah.
And they were miles apart from each other. Not really miles, but you know what I mean. Like they were far enough apart that she looked right at him and said that. That was really bad.
I thought that was awesome. Yeah.
And it really raised some questions for me. I'm like, does she legit see him? Is he like a ghost kind of thing? Anyway.
Yeah.
So
She can just look at his body language and tell.
Right. So Mr. Robot and Elliot have an argument because he's like,
Elliot says, we've still got to shut down White Rose's machine. And he's like, right. No, White Rose is done. We took all the money. That's all we said we wanted to do. And Elliot's like, no, White Rose isn't dead until her machine is dead. Oh, we also got to see that whole gunfight that they had at White Rose's mansion.
Was the Black Army,
yeah,
essentially, eliminating the FBI.
Yep. And some of the Dark Army died as well, but...
Right, but...
And I liked how there was one guy who was barely alive. White Rose walked over to him and said, you're looking for Zhang. He's not here. He's dead.
Yeah.
And then they shot him.
There's only White Rose.
Yeah. So Elliot says, no, I need to do this. And Mr. Robot's like, just remember, that system, that machine is in a nuclear reactor.
Yeah.
You know, a nuclear power plant. If you fuck this up, then you kill millions. Mm-hmm. You cause a meltdown. And Elliot's like, no, my malware is perfectly fine. He's like, it'll take you forever to write it. Oh, you already wrote it, didn't you? And he's like, yeah, it wasn't that hard. I used the old rootkit, blah, blah, blah. So he basically tells Mr. Robot, I got to do this on my own.
Yep.
And walks away from him. And then we get a little montage of him going cross country.
Now, hold on. There was a lot of music in this episode.
There was a lot of music.
Like the opening.
Oh, dude. No. There was a lot of music. There is nothing compared to the fucking inundation of music in Six Underground.
Oh, really?
Holy shit, dude. Anyway, you'll see. You'll see. But yes, you're right. There was a lot of music and a lot of good music. This show's always had really good music anyway. They pick good stuff to go along with their scenes. So he goes out there to... and this was interesting, too. So he goes out to Washington County there.
The Washington Township or whatever.
Yeah, Washington Township. Thank you. And when he gets to the area of the power plant, he watches these three vehicles go shit-tearing up the road, just flying like bats out of hell, screaming up the road and gone.
So like Beach Boys music or some shit.
And they're coming from the power plant. So he walks in, and essentially it's a ghost town.
Well, the guard shack is empty.
Yep. And the phone is off the hook. We get the traditional, you know,
and the door's, you know, kicked open.
Mm-hmm. Then he goes into the main building and has, you know, the second door that he tries opens right up. There's computers that are on and logged in, and he sits down at one and puts his thumb drive in and executes his code. Like, it's like victory.
But, okay. But it's so... I don't want to say depressing, because it's not depressing by any means, but it's so lackluster.
Yeah.
Is that the word I want? It's just kind of like, oh, that happened.
Yeah. It's just like he won.
Yeah. Okay. Even when he like executes and he's sitting there and like the high tension music kind of fades out.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of executed. And he's kind of like looking around. He's like, well, that's done.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, okay, well, I guess.
What other shit can I get up to?
He just starts kind of looking around, and then he sees a dead body. And he's like, uh-oh. And then he hears sirens, and he runs back and sees all these cop cars come tearing in. And he turns around back, and he looks, and there's like a guy in a white suit and a bunch of Black Army soldiers behind him. And he just goes, you're in the wrong place.
And it's the same guy who every time we've ever seen him, he's been in that full white suit, and he's always eating something.
Right.
So he's munching on a burger, and they walk him down a hallway.
We get like a segment of Elliot being guided to this room.
Yep.
Slowly. Like, not really any music playing, just hearing the guy crunch while he eats. And... Yep.
So he gets into this room, and it's a very Spartan room. It's got two doors. Each door has a keypad on it.
Yep.
And it's got a weird window. And behind the window, you can see a little beta fish, which is a copy of his fish, QWERTY. And
oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, there's the old-fashioned blue desk phone, and there's the book that his dad used to read, and the Apple IIe computer, which is the thing that he programmed on.
Yep.
And White Rose comes in, and he's just like, this isn't going to work on me. You know, it's not, and he's like, what's not going to work on you? And he's like, whatever you did to Angela, it's not going to work on me. You've surrounded me with things that are familiar to me. Your brainwashing is not going to work.
And right.
White Rose is like, it's not brainwashing. And he's like, you hate everybody. And BD Wong did a great job in this scene.
I think so.
Like, people always say, oh, don't make me laugh. But literally, he was laughing like almost like he had had nitrous or something.
Both of the – this whole scene with the two of them sitting down across from each other was awesome.
It was phenomenal.
I think that's why the ending pissed me off so much, because I really felt like the whole episode leading up into that moment of doomsday, if you will, mm-hmm. was tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
From the music, from the scenes with no dialogue of Elliot just kind of like walking in and – like, basically, you're sitting there going, it's a trap, you idiot! And he's still going in, or just everything. You know, like, all these scenes are just tremendous.
Yep.
And it's phenomenal, and I absolutely love it. And the dialogue, I can't do justice.
Probably, oh, no.
You
God,
can't
no.
do justice.
No.
But between White Rose and Elliot sitting across from each other, discussing how they're similar,
yep.
and how they're different, and how they both led their groups, and... You know, like, you look at the name of your group, F Society. I always wanted everything good for society. You didn't. See, I can't do it justice.
And then Elliot goes on this tear about – he basically talks about how, yes, he called it F Society because fuck these people and fuck the decisions that they make. And he wishes it was just that easy, except for he's always had something that he can't mimic, which is that he has these people in his life who help him and protect him because they have something that he will never have, and that's that they love him, and he doesn't love himself.
Yep.
And, you know, it actually brings White Rose to tears.
Yeah, it does.
And it was a very powerful speech. And you're right, I can't do it justice. That was the
I can't do it either. But it's amazing. And then White Rose gets – and Elliot's speech is great because there is no background music. There's no tension music in this thing. You're focused solely on what Elliot's saying.
Yep.
And I almost feel like – okay, so my USA Network app has been fucked up the last few weeks, and the dialogue, the audio track is just off, and I've tried uninstalling and reinstalling the app, and so essentially I'm left with watching it like the next day on my laptop, and usually kind of right before we record. And I think it's really paid off these last few weeks, actually, and especially tonight where I'm watching it on with headphones on. So because I have headphones on, I'm not hearing any ambient noise. I'm not hearing Wesley going on and on. I'm not hearing whatever. Kate's even watching the TV. I'm not hearing it. I'm focusing solely on the dialogue and what's on the screen because I'm not being distracted by anything else. Mm-hmm. And just sitting there listening to Elliot talk with no background music, nothing to help you build your tension.
Oh, except that sucked you right in.
Fuck, I did. That's what I'm trying to say. It pulled me in so hard.
Yeah.
Because I was so hyper-focused on their dialogue. That's why I think their back and forth was so tremendous. And maybe I'm overselling it.
Oh, no.
But
watching the two of them, like I said, BD Wong, with his laughter. Like, it was just amazing watching him, like, legitimately laughing from his belly.
Yeah.
And saying, don't make me laugh.
It's just, it was tremendous. And the second Ellie gets done, you hear click or whatever, and then the alarm starts sounding. Mm-hmm. And essentially White Rose is like, oh no, I put into effect. Well, you can't. I ran my malware. It's not going to allow it to run, but it's still going to run.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to melt down the plant.
And it's like, we knew what was going on, so we'll stop that.
Yeah. Well, you're going to melt down the plant. And he's like, yeah, so. Basically, this is when White Rose really starts talking about millions of people are going to die, but they're not really going to die. They're going to be reborn into this new world and on and on and on.
He says he's creating a new world, a new reality for them, that even people who have died before are going to be alive in this new world.
Which, to me, these are rantings of a madman.
Yep.
And I was fine with it. Mm-hmm. And then he pulls out a gun.
Because remember, all this time, we've been told he has a machine.
Yes.
We've never been told what it does.
Right.
He's been perfecting his machine. And when he goes off on his rant about this, he talks about how he lost not only the love of his life, he was not born into the life he was supposed to have. He lost the love of his life, and he was not given the life he should have lived.
Right.
And we've only ever heard that he has this machine, this project, this thing that he wants to do. He wanted to move it to the Congo. He tells us that the reason that he wanted to move it to the Congo was because he didn't want to kill all these people.
Yeah.
He didn't want to drain the power and cause a meltdown and stuff like that. But you kind of forced my hand, so now I got to do what I got to do.
Yeah. And Blair Rose pulls out a gun and basically tells Elliot, you have two choices. And before Elliot can answer or give him a chance to say what they are, he goes, well, whatever it is, the answer is no. Mm-hmm. And Blair Rose shoots herself right in the head.
Yep.
Done.
Yep.
And Elliot tries to escape the room and he can't. And Mr. Robot appears and starts helping him again.
He says, we got to figure out the code to this door.
Yep. Check that phone. Picks the phone up. Tells him the code.
Yeah. Yeah. A voice in like four different languages says 0509.
Yeah. And that's the code that opens the door. Yep. But then he notices in the book, you know, an old 5 1/4 floppy that says exit on it.
Yep.
And Mr. Robot's like, we got to go. And he's like, no, we can't. We got to do this. I have to.
She gave me a choice.
Yeah. And I got to. This is going to shut it down. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Robot tries to talk him out of it and say they got to go. And Elliot's like, no. And so the door shuts. Then Elliot plays the game. Which is like, you're in a room with a barrel. What do? Move the barrel. Go down the tunnel.
You're in a room with your friend.
Yeah, with your friend, yeah. And eventually he has to play it again, and this time he stays with his friend, and the note says, don't leave me alone, so they don't leave.
Mm-hmm.
And that shuts down everything.
Yep.
So we think.
Right.
But then there's an explosion.
And the screen goes red.
Well, no, there's an explosion. Mr. Robot opens the door, and it's like, it's too late. We can't escape. There's like a fire.
Right.
And then he sits down, and they face each other. And Mr. Robot, they both get super calm. Mr. Robot's just like, it's too late, isn't it? Yeah, it is. And then Elliot's like, I love you. And Mr. Robot's like, I only wanted to protect you or whatever. I mean, they have a moment.
Yeah.
And then the screen goes red.
It was a beautiful moment.
It was. And the screen goes red. And I'm like, wow, this is fucking awesome. And then it's How I Met Your Fucking Mother season finale all over again, where the kids on the couch go, that's not the end, Elliot. Now we're going to see this new fucked up world that doesn't make any sense for 15 minutes. I have real issues with the ending of it.
So I'm going to try to allay Mike's anger.
I hope so.
By explaining this out. So when we come back from commercial, the alarm's going off, and Elliot wakes up. We find out it's Elliot. He's in the same apartment, but it is clean. Mm-hmm. It is white. The sun is shining. He's playing a record on a record player. He's bopping to the music. He's brushing his teeth. He's making himself look beautiful. He gets a Skype call from Angela. He keeps having these headaches. He keeps, like, getting this pain in his head.
Yeah.
And
me too.
He gets a Skype call from Angela, and she is talking to him about, you know, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. Can't wait to get married tomorrow. They're going to get married. And we see this perfect life that Elliot has. He is the CEO of AllSafe. The people who were his nemeses at the place are now his underlings, and they really want, you know, his attention. E-Corp doesn't exist. It's now F-Corp.
Well, okay.
He sees a monitor showing a commercial for F Corp, and he remembers it as E Corp, and then he sees it like flicker to the E Corp logo and then back to the F Corp logo. So something's not quite right.
And to one of the Asian worker fella, he says to him, do you have that presentation ready for E Corp? And the guy goes, huh, you mean F Corp, right?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he must be out of it, man. It's F Corp. Oh yeah, you're right.
Yep.
And then we get the throwaway scene with the douchebag that shows up.
Terrell?
No.
Oh, yes.
In the office.
Because that was just like last week, you know, where they're like, don't forget, this guy was on the show for a while.
Yeah.
Remember, this was Angela's boyfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I didn't like that part at all. And then he basically walks out. And then we get them pitching F Corp, which it's Terrell. But Terrell is dressed more like the Elliot we've come to know and love. You know, he's kind of scummy. He's got the hoodie zipped halfway up. He's unshaven. His hair is kind of a wreck.
Yeah.
And he asks everybody to leave the room and asks Elliot, what is the worst thing in your life? And Elliot's like, well, if you're not going to go with my company, that's kind of the worst. And he's like, no, what's the worst thing in your life? And Elliot kind of goes, I liked the speech because this is something that I feel as well.
Okay, yes, I did like what he said here because unfortunately I can relate to it as well a little bit.
He basically said the worst thing in my life is also the best thing. He said, I wake up every morning, I listen to my records, I have my coffee, I go to the same job, do the same thing. I am in a never-ending cycle. And you know what? I'm secure, I'm safe, I'm fairly happy. So
yeah, I've dreamed about being adventurous and I've dreamed about seeing what else is out in the world. But you know what? At the same time, this works for me. And Terrell says, oh,
we also find out Mr. Robot's alive.
Yeah.
His dad's alive.
His dad's alive and
running his business, and he's aged.
And there's no mention of mom.
Oh.
And
well, no, we do. They do. Oh, no, that's right. There's no mention of mom, but he's an only child.
Yeah, and because that's what Angela says to him. She goes, you are such an only child.
Right.
And he just smiles and giggles about it. So,
which tells me that it's because Darlene, I can't think of her name on the show right now.
That's her name.
Oh, I thought that was her name on Supergatory.
No, okay. No.
So
that was Dahlia.
That's right, because Darlene is out of the blast radius.
Yes.
So that's she's not in that world.
So that's interesting. And Terrell basically tells him, you know, that's my worst thing as well. You know, I don't like this either. But Elliot pledges, worst use of a word ever, I pledge to you nothing bad will ever happen to E-Corp.
I'll stand by you.
Because he says, how can you guarantee that? And he says, because I know, I've seen everything that could go wrong with your company. And he's like, what do you mean you've seen it? So it tells me that this version of Terrell kind of knows that something's a little off.
Yeah.
That was the impression I was getting from him. He's like, what do you mean you know? And he's like, well, we ran, you know, mock-ups of everything that could possibly, you know, go wrong in your system, and we found solutions to all of them. So he lands the account.
Well, we assume
his dad saw says the
celebratory beer clanking of
and his dad says, you land the biggest fish, F-Corp. Yep. But there's the headaches, there's the E-Corp thing.
Sorry, we have to go back to Douchebag McGee.
Sure.
Who said, I can sell sand to Eskimos and ice to Arabs.
Yeah.
And the other guy just says, like,
the Asian guy's like, are you just coming up with the absolute worst kind of racism?
And Elliot's like, well, that's really not
I would
your argument whatsoever. Exactly. Yeah. So that was funny. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. They have this little celebratory lunch. Now, we keep seeing these little chinks in the armor, these little holes in whatever reality this is. Because we see now he tries to call. He's like, oh, I got to see, you know, if Angela's mom is home. And he calls up and he says, hello, Emily. Oh, that's weird. She picked up and then she hung up on me. Huh. And his dad's like, I know what it is. Angela was probably there and she didn't want to ruin the surprise. It's very Stepford-y.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, they're getting married tomorrow. We find out.
Yep. So basically, Elliot had his dad pick him up a first edition signed copy of from the mixed up files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweller.
Yeah.
Or whatever the last name is there. I can never remember it. Signed by the author, and he's going to leave that at Angela's place with some flowers because he forgot his wallet. I forgot my wallet. Well, that's not like you.
Yeah. Must be because I'm so flustered.
That's right. No, his dad says that. He's like, right, you must be so flustered. So this is where things are really starting a little unravel, okay? So Elliot goes to Angela's place to drop off the book and the flowers, and he's talking to her on the phone, and he looks in the trash can, and there's a broken glass and napkins with blood all over them.
Yeah.
And he's just like, are your parents in town yet? And she's like, oh, they were, but I had to leave them because I had to do something. And so I left them. They were at my house.
They were just at my place.
Yeah. And he goes, your dad sure likes to drink. She's like, what's that? And he's like, nothing.
Nothing, honey.
It was very bizarre.
And he shoves the paper from the flowers into the trash can, covering everything.
Yeah.
I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not, but they made a point of showing it.
Yep. So he leaves the stuff there for her, and they have this cute little moment about, she's like, well, what's tomorrow? And he's like, I don't know, what is it? And they have this cute little saccharine diabetes-inducing moment. And then he gets a taxi back to his place, and the guy's like, oh, is it okay if I have the radio on? And he's like, turn it up, man.
And it's Turn Up the Radio.
Yep, which was the same song he was listening to in his place that
morning. Yeah.
And he gets back to his place, and it's all dark, and he locks the door, and he turns around and goes, who are you? And it's the Elliot we know sitting at his desk at the computer with the hoodie and the it's our messy Elliot facing down with this one. Right. And then the episode ends.
Here's my problem.
Go right ahead.
This better be a fucking dream. because this whole show has been pretty realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the reality of the hacking, like people sit there and go, yeah, this is possible.
Yep.
You know, yeah, the storylines are pretty extreme because that's what you do on a TV show, but it has not been fantasy based. It has not been, has been kind of a reality based, dealing with depression, dealing with anxiety, dealing with social issues, and you know. And if this turns out to be like his magic machine is a fucking dream machine, or dealing with afterlife and shit, and like the final couple episodes they go supernatural on us, I'd be very pissed off.
See, that's where you were going with it?
That's what I thought, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. That's why I said it better be a dream sequence. What did you think it was?
Alternate reality. Parallel universe.
Okay, again, I don't want that though. That's not what this show is. This is not a fantasy show. You can have alternate universes on The Flash because superheroes don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
This show has been very reality-based. Now all of a sudden they're going to fucking flip the switch with three episodes to go.
I am definitely on board with you that this was a hard left turn if this is the direction that they're going in.
Yeah.
And it's generous to say three episodes to go because we have two episodes and they're back-to-back one event.
Technically, yes.
So we're getting 2 hours next week that is the series finale.
Right.
So I am absolutely on board that this was a hard, hard fucking left turn.
Yeah.
I'm still okay with it if that's what it is, just because I don't think that that's what it is, though. I don't think that it legitimately is an alternate reality. I don't think that the machine transported him to another world. I think that we're seeing inside of Elliot's brain.
And if that's what we're seeing, I'm fine with that as well. Because we've dealt with, because this is basically, we've dealt with that as well when we've seen, because, you know, we've seen Mr. Robot and his mother and child Elliot all talking together, and I'm assuming that's in Elliot's brain as well. So I'm okay with that. If this is in his brain and he's in a coma or something, or he's
unconscious. I don't even know about the coma.
But if this is, he's dead and this is his, I wouldn't like that either.
I have a feeling. And maybe I'm wrong here.
They're going to Bob Newhart this? No. And the whole series has been a dream?
No. No. I was going to say that this version of Elliot that we saw, this happy, well-to-do, easygoing, successful in life Elliot, may be the fourth personality that we've never seen.
That's what I kind of thought as well when the alarm went off. It's like, it's your wake-up call. It's your wake-up call. And he's like, because, you know, oh, he's asleep or whatever. I thought, oh, maybe.
And they've been saying that all along.
Right, I'm like, oh, maybe that's who this is. But then, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see, I guess, what
he's
happens.
He's in denial. He's living in his own little dream world where Angela's there. And that's why, you know, for him, it's F Corp rather than E Corp.
Right. Which, if that is the case, I'm okay with it. But, like, this, it's just, I've really enjoyed the show.
Mm-hmm.
And this, okay. Stephen King book and movie Dreamcatcher. I never read the book. I just watched the movie.
God damn, that movie sucked. I love the How Did This Get Made on that. You really need to listen to it.
Oh, no, I did.
Okay.
So anyways, I really enjoyed the movie until Dudas is a fucking space alien. Like, Stephen King has a history of, like, giving you something that's pretty fucking awesome and then giving you such a hard turn at the end that you're like, what the damn hell?
But what I understand is that the movie had almost nothing in common with the book.
Right. But I'm just saying, that pissed me off.
Yep.
And I'm kind of annoyed with the final 15 minutes of this episode.
Well,
so
let me ask you this.
It's not like I'm not going to watch the series finale. I'm going to watch it with an open mind, but I just don't want to leave the taste in my mouth that the final fucking 5 minutes of How I Met Your Mother did.
Let me ask you this.
Sure.
Why do we keep this show for the end of the episode?
To piss people off? I don't know.
We keep this show for the end of the episode because we watch it the night it airs.
Yes, yes, yes.
Rather than every other show.
I'm sorry, I thought you meant why they wait that to the end.
No.
Not why do we wait to talk about
it. We wait to talk. We keep this to the end because we watch it as soon as it's on.
Yeah.
Because we fucking love this show.
Yes.
We have watched this since season one.
Yeah, yeah.
We have loved everything about it. Even the worst episode.
Yeah.
We've still thought this show fucking rocks.
Yep.
Do you really think that Sam Esmail, after everything that he's done so far, is the type of guy who's like,
now watch what I'm going to do to fuck with these guys.
I didn't think that's what they were going to do with How I Met Your Mother, and they did.
Yeah, fuck that, though.
But I'm just saying, though, like the same scenario. I get that.
You once bitten, twice shy. But
right.
I have complete faith
oh.
that whatever Sam Esmail is doing, it's going to pay off. And we're going to be sitting here going, holy fuck. This could also be because, like I said, I just got done watching Watchmen,
yeah.
which some of the stuff in that had such a slow burn that it started in episode one
right.
and didn't end till episode 9. So I'm on board for this. I don't care what it is. I'm excited.
Well, I mean, I'm excited about the show. This show is very unique in that Sam Esmail either wrote or directed almost every single episode. So, I mean, his hands are all over this show. Mm-hmm. You don't typically see a creator write and direct almost every single episode. Well, let me put it this way. Season one, he either wrote or directed every episode.
Yep.
Season two, he wrote and directed every episode, but, well, okay. He wrote every single episode. Sorry, directed every episode. And he wrote, like, all but two. Season three, same kind of scenario. He directed every single episode, and he wrote the majority of them. And now in this season, again, same thing. He's directed every single episode. So, I mean, his hands are all over this.
Yep.
And he's written and directed the final four episodes of this season, if you count the final two episodes as two episodes. But it is one.
Dude, he turned an episode into a five-act play.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You know,
yeah.
He's done some amazing fake-outs, some amazing things with this show.
The silent episode. Oh, my gosh.
And, I mean, that's just this season.
Yeah, I know. So I mean, again, I just...
The fake out in the whole first season.
Yep.
Or the fake out to the halfway point in the second season, you know, with him being in jail.
Right.
There were some amazing things that this guy has done. So, again, I'm...
This is just such a hard...
Hard left turn.
Yeah. I'm just afraid where the show's coming to an end. That's all. I think just the How I Met Your Mother thing kind of hit me. And
I get you. I get you. And I'm not saying you better not feel this way. You're certainly right. entitled to. I'm just telling you that I'm hopefully going to assuage that a little bit and say, dude, trust me. I think what he's doing is going to pay off. And we'll find out this coming weekend. Yeah. Holy shit, are we going to have a lot to talk about?
So let me ask you this question.
Yes.
We've already been talking now for hours 40 minutes.
Far too long.
Yeah. And we have these three episodes of Crisis on Infinite Earths to talk about.
Yeah.
Do you want to wait? Want to talk about them now or wait till next week when we don't have a lot to talk about?
Yeah, let's wait.
Because next week we are going to have a new Mandalorian. We're going to have Star Wars. We're going to have the series finale of Mr. Robot. But really nothing else.
Right.
Most every other show is in hiatus.
Yep.
And yes, The Witcher comes out next Friday, but...
I'm not binging that.
I don't want to binge it either.
Nope.
So maybe we'll hold off on doing Crisis on Infinite Earths, Parts 1, 2, and 3 until next week.
I can do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So that's the episode.
Yes.
And, yeah, I'll talk to you next week. I'm Superstar ML, Superstar ML on the Twitter.
The Quantum G33K.
That's the show.
Later.